Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Tom.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good. Everything's... These are very strange times.
The world's going
it's
crazy.
Good to see you.
It's good to see you. It's always good to see you.
Yes.
Where are you?
I'm in New York City.
Heard of that.
Yeah, it's the place. It's the place where all the Canadian forest fire smoke likes to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they sent it that way.
Yes, yeah, smoke loves Broadway. Everyone knows that.
And I heard everyone complaining about the smoke, whereas in LA, that's just known as Wednesday.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the world's on fire here regularly. So you've got limited sympathies from me on that.
Mm-hmm.
Just breathe it in. Just take it all in. But listen, welcome everybody to this emergency broadcast of really this, you know, we interrupt our usual podcast schedule to just catch up on the fucking nuttiness that's been going on for a few weeks. We have been recording episodes of this podcast, but watching events just transpire that continually are changing this conversation, changing the dynamic of the UAP phenomenon. Holy shit. So we just decided that we had to jump into this and
to stay we're not breaking news. We're not trying to stay on the pulse of things, but so much has happened.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
We kind of have to address it, or else we've recorded 6 conversations and with some great guests, and 2 of them were we did one show with Leslie Kane. And then the next day we did another wonderful show with Ralph Blumenthal, the 2 people who wrote the New York Times 1917 article about the, you know, about ATF and the Tic Tac. Yeah. And we didn't know at the time that we were recording that they were in the process of breaking like one of the biggest stories of all time. The David Grush whistleblower story, that David Grush had come forward and made an intelligence community inspector general's whistleblower complaint, stating that that the United States had secret UFO craft retrieval programs and reverse engineering programs that they were illegally keeping from Congress.
Yes, he claimed to, and thank you, Leslie and Ralph, who are, you know, fonts of UAP information. So these are incredible interviews, regardless of the fact that they were sitting on the David Grush story. There's Ralph Blumenthal wrote an amazing book about John Mack and Leslie. So these episodes will be
well worth listening to.
Anyone, yes, worth catching up on. But yes. the one among the claims was that David Grush, who is a former decorated war hero, in Afghanistan, he was a naval intelligence officer. He was also part of the UAP task force, I think, from 2019 to 2020. Mm-hmm. Someone with extremely high clearance, security clearance. And he claims that he has spoken to many individuals who have, I believe, firsthand knowledge of these retrieval programs and has seen documentation and seen some photographs, I think he said, that confirmed for him the reality of the existence of these programs. And so he sought out legal protection and has testified apparently three times before Congress, or at least with the Senate Intelligence Armed Services Committee. Does that all sound about right?
Yes. And I think he was also the representative of NRO, the National Reconnaissance Office, to the UAP Task Force. And I just saw a little thing online today where they released a document where with the NRO, which is basically satellite surveillance of the planet, I think, and a lot of that sort of thing. So he was the liaison between that and the UAP Task Force. And I just saw a thing where the NRO had a document discussing an object they observed that resembled the Tic Tac, and they used the term the Tic Tac in the official document.
So this story was an incredible bombshell to rival the 2017 story that revealed that Arrow existed.
Or ATIP.
And right, technically, yes. ATIP and identified ATIP, technically was may have been speaking about Arrow. But yeah. But that story sort of shook the foundations. Everything sort of seems post 2017. That particular story, it got Congress activated. It started to have hearings on this, and now this story, arguably David Grush is the most high-ranking intelligence official to ever come forward to confirm the existence of retrieval programs, secret access programs, legacy programs. And so far, there has been both crickets, meager efforts to try to disenfranchise him, try to debunk him. And on the contrary, he actually seems to have been getting, those who are willing to testify on behalf of his credentials, on his character, are very impressive. People that are currently in government and high level security clearance. We have a sort of mutual person we know who we've spoken to, not yet on the podcast, but is probably the most legitimate and credentialed academic on this issue, privately emailed with me about vouching for his character. And the mainstream media, how would you describe what they were doing with this story?
Totally absent, I would say. Unbelievably absent. Because even if you you want to dismiss the content of what he's saying, the very fact that someone of his rank and security clearance is making this argument, even if you think he's crazy or lying, it's a big story and would be covered if it was on any other subject on Earth. If it was about anything, at all, other than the UFO story, it would be getting wall-to-wall coverage. But because it is about UFOs or UAPs, it has gotten nothing. The only coverage has been on News Nation.
News Nation's been all over it, and they had the I think they aired the Ross Colfart interview.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and they've been doing tons of interviews supporting that interview, and I just saw Sean Cahill on there recently.
And the one thing that he added in the Colthart interview was the idea that we may have pilots recovered from some of these crashes, which is not something that was in the Leslie Kean, Ralph Blumenthal story, or she has said that she won't comment on it because...
Yeah. She said, well, yeah, I guess they didn't discuss it. She didn't discuss it. But I get the feeling that Ralph and Leslie did not want to discuss that or did not want to know that at the time. And this, who else is Michael Schellenberg is another guy who's been backing up the story, but also wouldn't go near the bodies angle of it, which is very odd.
What's that all about?
I know it's just that feeling. I think it's just that fear that that's too far and no one will listen to the rest of it if they say that. But it's kind of a weird logic to say, well, all right, we're willing to say there are non-human craft, but we're going to draw the line at that non-humans piloted them.
Yeah, I mean, exotic technology is exotic technology, and one, you know, it doesn't take a great leap, and it's always been a part of the mythology of Roswell that there were bodies associated with it, and whether or not these bodies represent living beings or these bodies represent some sort of technology, perhaps some sort of, you know, avatars for whatever else is out there. It is insane to even be talking about this, and yet it is now. And I do want to point out there was like these weird, you know, I think Ezra Klein did an interview with Leslie where he was sort of kind of poking around it, and there
for
is
his,
that
for his pod for his New York Times podcast,
yeah, and there was this Ross Douthat sort of very dismissive opinion piece in the New York Times, and some kind of groups were sort of toying with it, but still don't know what to do with it. And there's still that kind of air of this sort of arrogance of, you know, mainstream journalism that just can't be touched. Despite the fact that this spillage continues to happen. And there's this activity, this bipartisan activity in the House and Senate that is undeniable. And would be news about it on any other level. And some of the things that Grush talks about are wild pieces of history. Apparently he was allowed to talk about this 90-year-old case that, a craft crashed in Italy. And the Vatican, the Pope, the 12th, whoever the Pope was, orchestrated this ability to get some craft to the U.S. And, that is one of the crashes that we possess, and that somehow that maybe that's why he was able to talk about this, because I don't know, outside the intelligence, what's the term for it? The jurisdiction, enough time had passed.
Yeah.
So that is one of the craft that we had supposedly from Italy.
Yeah. Pre-war, pre-war under Mussolini, it crashed.
Well, the only good thing Mussolini's done is he managed to get a craft to us, I suppose. He claims there are 12 craft in some sort of government or private industry possession. Mm-hmm. And I guess the question is, why don't we see any pictures of it? What should we be concerned that there is only information being conveyed from one source to another source, and David Grush is saying he does not have firsthand experience with these programs. Yes. Is that something we should wonder about, question?
Well, certainly, I think it's a misrepresentation when people say it's just hearsay. You know, it's just hearsay if I say it. You know, if I come around and say, you know, I heard this guy say they got these UFOs.
That's what we're doing.
They got the thing, you know, they got a thing. That's your, but... But when it's a guy who has top level security clearance, who has apparently been able to look into over like 2,000 UAPs in his job working as an intelligence officer, not UAP, SAP programs, the most secret programs that the government has. So he's been able to look in on all of them, which is kind of how he sort of got a lot of this information. And he's got other top, you know, high ranking people with high level security clearances, all confirming what he is saying and backing him up and vouching for his character. And I mean, that was all that came public, even in the article. I mean, they had people like, was it Carl E. Nell came forward in the debrief article and
right,
on
he was part
record.
Of the task force.
Yeah, and he on the
and then a pseudo and then an individual using a pseudonym, correct?
Yeah, a guy named, named Jonathan Grant, which I guess is just his nom de spy.
I want a nom de spy.
Yeah. So he also came forward and said, and not only vouched for his character, but said that basically the non-human intelligence phenomenon is real. We are not alone, is what Gray said. You know, he said retrievals are not limited to the United States, and this is a global phenomenon. So it sort of goes beyond the level of hearsay when you've got all of these people backing it up. And then just recently, as you know, Marco Rubio went public with a statement that Congress has been approached going back as much as 2 years ago by other whistleblowers who are not public and who have fears for their safety and their careers.
To me, this is even fucking nuttier than the David Grush story. I mean, the fact that Rubio came forward, and whatever politics aside, I'm no Rubio political fan. This guy is vice chairman of the Senate Intelligence and Armed Services Committee. This is not a sort of side group of clowns. They're dealing with the most serious secrets on earth. Mm-hmm. And they are unanimous and bipartisan in their approach to this issue. So sorry,
but Marco Rubio and Kristen Gillibrand working hand in glove on this. You know, you've got Mark Warner and Tim Burchett. I don't remember how to pronounce his name.
I'll accept either pronunciation.
But, you know, again, the far, you know, really far right and far left and people all the way in the middle. And they're writing legislation that is, maybe before we get to that, should we run just the clip of Rubio?
Run the fucking tape, Dave.
Senator Rubio said that the senator, has heard from those firsthand account witnesses to some of these claims. And I tried to press him and asked him in a number of different ways. The people who are saying that they have seen these things up close and personal, spacecraft and others, you have heard from those people who've made those claims. And here's what the senator told us. I'm going to play a big chunk of our exchange.
We'll say there are people that have come forward to share information with our committee over the last couple of years. I would imagine some of them are potentially some of the same people that perhaps he's referring to. I want to be very protective of these people. A lot of these people came to us even before these protections were in the law for whistleblowers to come forward.
Sorry, people who have had firsthand knowledge, who claim to have firsthand knowledge of seeing this type of thing?
Or have firsthand knowledge or firsthand claims of certain things. Some are public figures, you know, and you've heard from them in the past. Others, have not shared publicly. And so we're trying to gather as much of that information as we can. And the reason why I'm being cautious, I'm not trying to be evasive, but I am trying to be protective of these people. Some of these people still work in the government. And frankly, a lot of them are very fearful of their jobs, fearful of their clearances, fearful of their career. And some, frankly, are fearful of harm coming to them.
So that category of people who have firsthand knowledge, who say they have actually seen these kinds of things, do you find many of them credible?
Well, I don't find them either not credible or credible because we have no basis. Understand, some of these claims are things that are beyond sort of the realm of what any of us has ever dealt with. What I think we owe them is just a mature, you know, understand, listening, and trying to put all these pieces together and just sort of intake the information without any prejudgment or jumping to any conclusions in one direction or another. I will say I find most of these people at some point, or maybe even currently, have held very high clearances and high positions within our government. So you do ask yourself, like, what incentive would so many people with that kind of qualification, these are serious people, have to come forward and make something up?
I mean, that's pretty remarkable.
It's fucking nuts. It's nuts. That is unprecedented in 75 years or 80 years of UAP culture conversation, whispers. That is again, the vice chairman, the second highest ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Armed Services Committee, basically saying, why the fuck would these people with all these high level clearances be coming forward? So many of them would come forward and compromise and sacrifice careers, potentially their lives to what? To spread disinformation, to talk bullshit, to waste the world's time. It's absurd.
And people who came forward before the whistleblower protection legislation was written were also risking their freedom.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Because they obviously feel like this, the world needs to know. I don't know if there's something they know that compels us to know now versus just government secrecy. It's funny. We were talking about this, and if I may share, you expressed that you were getting a little concerned. Do you want to just share what was concerning you?
Well, I say after watching after watching the Marco Rubio thing, I started to get this feeling of what are we walking towards at this point? And are we going to regret it? Are we going to regret wanting to know this? And how is it going to affect the world that we live in? The world that, or more importantly, the world that our children are going to live in. Because we both have children that we find reasonably tolerable and want their lives to be relatively pleasant.
My kids don't want anything to do with this issue. It started with like, okay, dad's doing like UFO podcast, which is that alone was becoming like, it's anxiety. They don't want to talk about it because it makes them anxious. And I can understand that because it is now getting to the point of, it has to be looked at so squarely. And now the implications have to be taken into account because the is it or isn't it is becoming just, it's not even becoming, it's gone. I think the is it or isn't it is gone. This Marco Rubio quote to me is an effort to, what is his motivation for coming forward? What the fuck good does it do him? I mean, is it just some big UFO constituency in Florida that like demands that he speak to this issue? No, like I don't think this helps him or Kristen Gillibrand other than the fact that they are painfully aware of some hugely important secret and they must be either waving a flag to those in possession of this material. Mm-hmm. There are so many implications that the mind goes wild. For instance, I'll just put this out there. It speaks to a sort of shadow government. Like, why the hell is Marco Rubio going like, it's obviously there's serious people coming forward with incredible top secret clearances saying this program exists and he doesn't know where it is. He's at the top committee level of who should know where this shit is. So
yeah. And he's worried that his witnesses may be in danger.
Yeah. Maybe killed. Forward. And it, like, presumably we should be able to protect those people. But so is there some shadow government? There's been quotes in the past by Lou Elizondo, for example, that only certain presidents were given this information. Perhaps only presidents with intelligence backgrounds, because the other political players simply didn't seem either serious enough or may not last long enough or may not be trusted with this information. So I guess that limits who we may have assumed knew or didn't know. Perhaps George Bush Sr. knew, you know, Eisenhower, the number of presidents who have dealt with or been in intelligence is limited. CIA was never seen as a great career track to the presidency prior to George Bush being nominated as vice president for Reagan. But I think that was one of the disturbing aspects of the Rubio quote, among many disturbing aspects, was just who's running this fucking show? Like,
yes, and here's another thing to get back to harping on the media. You have, again, Marco Rubio and Kristen Gillibrand, you know, the right and the left, writing new, as of when was this, just a few days ago that they published the new.
She just tweeted that she has secured the full funding for Arrow, which I don't know what Arrow really is at this point. It feels like it's a maybe legit, maybe sort of, but go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say that they've written unanimous, you know, bipartisan legislation. And at this point in our political history, that alone should be front page news, no matter what it's about. If it was about, if it was about, bell bottoms, what kind of, you know, outlawing bell bottoms, then that would get front page. Anything, whatever.
Arguably worth doing. Yeah.
Yeah. But whatever, but the fact that you have this bipartisan, fully bipartisan legislation written and put out for the public, and not, no one in the press is covering it. There's not one article about it. There's not one interview on the news other than on News Nation.
Part of me says maybe that's a good thing, because the moment this becomes mainstream media fodder, the moment sides get taken. It's almost to the benefit of disclosure for the American public. I'm just being, you know, kind of, you know, just taking the devil's advocate side, that it allows the Senate, it allows the people sort of pushing this issue to speak with one voice. And God knows, with something like this, that is required, that will be required, and not for, God forbid, to become a red-blue issue. Yeah. And then somebody's got to like say this is bullshit or that's bullshit or whatever. And right now you see Romney, Warner, Gillibrand, Rubio, Kennedy, like from Louisiana, like who's, I mean, you never know what the hell's going to come out. Like they have all, who's the, Kenneth Blumenthal, the Senator Blumenthal, they are all speaking to, we're not being told everything. We know we're not being told everything. It's clearly something's going on. We're demanding someone account for this. And the problem is, how do you force Lockheed or Boeing? How do you force it out of one of these companies if, for example, they consider it their own intellectual property, their own property? They consider it their own, you know, they've been reverse engineering this for 70 years. Who's to say they don't have a case in court that this material belongs to them?
Yeah. They're using money as their weapon against the secret government, the secret Pentagon programs, that they're creating a list, this new legislation, creating a bunch of rules. And if you violate them, your SAP gets defunded. The spigot gets turned off. And it seems like reading the legislation, it feels like it's crafted. And again, this came out, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks after
Grubbs? Yeah, I mean, it's been a flood. We've been like, wait, we got this podcast coming out. We got all this shit. But it's literally like change by the day. Crazy stories are coming out. So
looking at this legislation, which, you know, I think you highlighted when you first read it, that, you know, that it mentions, you know, materials not of Earth in the legislation. And it keeps talking about materials and information. But it also talks about third party, about basically funding for third party research, which basically means handing it off to private industry. I believe I'm interpreting it correctly.
I think that's what it's in reference to. Yeah.
And saying that, that is pretty explicitly saying that will not be funded if it is not reported to the Congress within 60 days or something like that.
So here's my question about that, and help me with this if you can. So is the idea that hypothetical UAP crashes,
mm-hmm.
government says, okay, we got this. We're going to give it to some defense contractor, a Raytheon or a Lockheed or a Boeing or one of these. We're going to give this to you. And in giving this to you, they're like, hey, man, I don't know what to do with this. So I'm going to take funding from you. And that's what this, because to me, I was like, well, wait a minute, you're going to cut off funding for a program you don't know exists? What? How does that work?
Yeah, I'm not sure how the actual allotment works, but I think the idea is that there are these, I guess it really is to encourage people to come forward, the whistleblowers, to protect whistleblowers, and also to make it a crime to not come forward.
So, yeah, I mean, it feels like, I'm just trying to understand, is there some like pool of money that they know is going into the fog?
Well, they
do. You know, and they're just like, well, just start chopping off, you know,
well, that's
arms
how,
here.
That's how it's supposed to work. It's supposed to be all those SAP programs, you know, secure access programs, you know, the compartmentalized access programs, those things are all supposed to have congressional oversight.
Right.
The crux of Grush's whistleblower complaint is that congressional oversight has been subverted, and that these programs have been taken into the dark world and been moved into private industry, and that there has been, you know, I mean, that also in the legislation, there's even a reference to funding for security for these programs, saying that if you aren't reporting the, you know, material and information, then you get no money for your security. So they're basically trying to cut off the funding for the secrecy, cut off the funding for the cover-up. So they're using finances as a way to starve out all of these programs. It seems like every part of this legislation is about starving illegal programs of funding until they come clear, but also throwing out the carrot of that if you report within the time allotted in the legislation, there will be no criminal action taken against you. So basically, you've got people who, you know, who, I mean, that's part of the complaint, is that there are people committing crimes in order to cover up these programs.
Listen, I mean, the senator and David Grush has been quoted in the last 24 hours as saying that he has had a terrifically hard time since coming forward publicly, and that he's not going to speak to it, but he implied very much.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Threats, you know, he implied danger. Rubio said that these people fear for their safety. It would surprise none of us that this had been over the years. It's, I think, pretty obvious that people have been threatened. They've been surveilled. They have been driven out of careers. They've been ridiculed. They've been mocked. They've been publicly shamed and or potentially killed. You know, George Knapp was very clear and about things that happened to Bob Lazar, whose profile is rising with every revelation that comes forward, because he may have been the canary in the coal mine after all the, what he has been through, because Knapp said witnesses were scared, their children threatened, things, you know, people who wanted to come forward to corroborate Lazar's story were completely backed off. Totally disappeared, or at least they vanished from Knapp's, not that they died necessarily, but were threatened that they could be killed. And Lazar himself, his house was bugged. His phones were bugged. He was, of course, totally derided. So I find that there's going to be a lot of looking back. And that's just such a small example of the wreckage that will have to be reckoned with.
Yeah,
if this all comes forward, and as it appears to be coming forward, because now it just feels like this hapless flailing between the media and the government and these, no one knows what to say. I mean, and honestly, it's just no one knows what to say. This Grush has pretty unimpeachable credentials, integrity, character that people will vouch for, war hero, top level clearances. What the fuck? What's the motivation? There's not that much money in the UFO game. Like, this is not like people that people are under the illusion that they're all billionaires. No,
there's
really
no money
the
in
there. It's not a huge,
you know, go to the, you know, say, well, I've never been to any of the UFO conferences and that, but you've seen it. It's not a, you know,
I mean,
it's not like Comic-Con.
No, they feel a duty. They feel an obligation to come forward. And yes, and there's obviously, we know there's a huge sort of arena of kind of quackery. Yes, of course there is, because it's something that very few people can be experts on. And those, so if those claiming to be, but we're in a new ball game, totally new ball game. And I don't think these officials, I don't think these intelligence officials, what the fuck would they be wasting their time on this, and if they didn't feel that it was critically important and it was happening.
Well, as I say, like they say, the appropriate committees, the Select Committee on Intelligence, the Committee on Armed Services, and the Committee on Appropriations of the Senate, the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the Committee on Armed Services, and the Committee on Appropriations of the House of Representatives. So these are serious. These are some of the most serious committees that you can be on in
highly coveted, highly coveted in government. You know, if you're a senator, you want to be the big dog, you go on one of these committees.
Yes, yeah, you definitely. Yeah, if you hope to have a path to the presidency at some point, these are committees you want to be on. You know, or you know,
and so, also it's the coolest committee because they know all the secret shit. I mean, that's what they're reporting with the CIA, NSA. Mm-hmm. You know, they're dealing with international and espionage and skullduggery and all that stuff.
Yeah. So the fact that the people on these committees have written laws demanding that, you know, and again, I look through it, it just seems like it's written. It's like a bespoke, tailor-made legislation built exactly around what we know of Grush's whistleblower complaint. You know, everything about it, it even mentions the stovepipe in here. There's like a part of it is a paragraph about avoiding technology and security stovepiping, which is something that Grush has talked about, that these, you know, that there's no communication. It's something that Bob Lazar talked about back in 89. That there's no communication between the different groups of people working on these projects. You know, that it, you know, as I said, that it talks about, you know, private industry exploitation. It even talks about like modes of propulsion that, you know, that excludes things that are modes of like craft that have propulsion we already understand, including like, you know, ionic drives. So basically they list every form of propulsion that we know human beings have created and excluded them from the legislation. So,
I mean, I think it's true that they know more, of course, than we do because they've been getting these classified briefings and they've been hearing from, as Rubio said, so many people.
Yes. And he said high over the past clearances. Couple of years. You said over like the last 2 years.
So they have an idea of what someone has. They are getting firsthand information, but they don't yet have in their minds the authority or the evidence to shut it down, reveal it, whatever it is. But what does it say about why now and what possible reasons could there be to not come forward with this information? Is there a reason timing-wise it's coming out now? I think that's kind of the anxiety thing.
I think definitely this is a big part. Like, you can't see that. But the Grush's complaint, it can't be a coincidence that this is all happening since he went public. And so if you think he's just a crank or a nut or a guy who is being duped by other people in you know, in the military or in secret programs, you know, if you think it's all just a scam or it's all just lies or he's crazy or he's corrupt, it's hard to believe that the people who had access, who had to sit down and listen to his classified testimony and the classified testimony of multiple people with high security clearances who are corroborating his story. And now even Marco Rubio is saying that they've heard testimony from people who claim to have had hands-on contact with these programs. So, you know, so the people who have had the access to the most information, those committees, are writing this legislation in response, you know, largely to this whistleblower complaint.
Makes it historic. It makes it a landmark moment. It makes it another Rubicon that is crossed and can never be uncrossed. And we have people on record and testimony now, you know, and my sense is this will continue to flow in the direction of more and more disclosure. And we'll see just exactly how prepared our culture is to absorb and receive this data. My feeling is, I don't know how far it needs to go before people wake up and realize this is happening, because I'm sure you feel the same way. I talk to people who are like, what? Like, you know, they're kind of fascinated and interested, but they're not aware of what's going on, or or how far it's gone, or how over the cliff. We're like, we're Wile E. Coyote way past the cliff's edge, just waiting to, you know, and
the disturbing part of that is that it throws into doubt the trustworthiness of our entire news media landscape. You know, if they can turn a blind eye to this story so consistently, and in the face of what, even if it's none of it's true, the allegations are huge stories. The people making the allegations are huge stories.
Yeah, you know? I think you're right.
And it's. You know, especially since this is all happening like in the same week Daniel Ellsberg.
Yeah.
Around the same time that Daniel Ellsberg has died. And, and we know what his name means to the country and the history of the country, and the kind of coverage he got, and the kind of courage that the press showed at that point in history to break the story. And now we have what is arguably, I mean, if there's any truth to this, orders of magnitude more important than the Pentagon Papers.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And I think that there will be such extraordinary pushback. You have so many vested interests in this not coming to light institutionally, that religious groups, the biggest defense contractors in the world and their trillions of dollars. There are so many interests that would be not interested in this being true and coming out, which again makes the fact that high levels of government are pushing back and saying this needs to be known beyond fascinating, such an interesting power struggle. And then where the media falls in that, I'm not sure if it speaks to the ingrained arrogance against this issue, this sort of, you know, kind of looking down, sneering at it. I don't know if that's just the institutional part of the media problem, or the fact that we know they're owned by certain billionaire people, interests that may or may not be getting told what to say or what to do or what to program or what not to program.
Yeah. And I think the most, charitable interpretation would be that they are just examples of the immense power of ridicule, which, you know, to go back into the history of the subject, you know, the Robertson panel back in the, early 70s? Oh no, it was the 50s. The late,
I
was
like, yeah, 52. I think it was earlier.
I'm
that,
sorry,
yeah.
52. I was thinking of a different panel. The Condon panel, the Robertson panel, that basically that basically said, you know, we want to deal with this. We need to stigmatize it. We need to make it ridiculous. We need to make talking about it ridiculous. We need to make it a career suicide. We need to, you know, program of, you know, basically character assassination. And we need to coordinate with the entertainment media. We need to feed them stories and ridicule. And certainly my people, my tribe, comedians, have done way more than their fair share to destroy the credibility of anyone who comes forward wanting to talk about UFOs.
You think about the so many witnesses. I'm reminded of Leslie Kane's book, where she spoke with so many police officers and military people and pilots, people who were not interested in the UFO topic, people that were living their lives and something happened to them and they simply said what happened to them and then get sucked into this, what you're talking about, this world of kind of ridicule or disdain, and people deal with it in their own families. And I'm reminded of any witness who's come forward that, you know, just wants to tell the truth, has been fighting against this energy that you're describing, this kind of orchestrated cultural decision that was made at high levels to make this a no-go territory.
Yeah.
And it continues to this day. And it's, you know, we will have, I mean, someone I know personally is going to be a guest on the podcast who had no interest in this issue, wasn't into it at all, and had something happen to them that was absolutely extraordinary. And her story is amazing. And it makes you realize that what people have carried around with them, that have had encounters or had experiences or know things that they just want to come forward with, and what a legacy, kind of a shameful legacy, will need to be confronted as this comes to light, and that appears to be an absolute inevitability at this point. If you're paying attention at all, it's clearly out there, and there is no question. But for the public at large to wrestle with the ramifications of this is going to be quite a show.
Yeah. No, I think definitely you experience it with your own family, and I have with mine too. The sudden deadening of the eyes when you start to talk.
My son just runs away.
Yeah.
And Amelia, my daughter, just kind of rolls her eyes. Like, but I don't want to scare them.
No.
I don't want to. I find it still fascinating, and I kind of look to those who see the upsides to these revelations as opposed to the potential downsides of these revelations. And you know, I don't know if we want to kind of speak to those, but again, it goes back to the anxiety of Ruby. The Rubio thing was for me also like, really what I said to myself was, what the fuck has Dave gotten me into? Like, that was really my, like, how everything was going along fine.
And for me, it was this moment of going, because I sort of got serious about the topic as an intellectual curiosity and a sociological curiosity about the fact that there's all this evidence and no one's paying any attention.
Yeah.
I was like, how does an entire culture or many cultures get manipulated into looking the other way when there is so much really credible evidence? And that was all really interesting. So it was all just interesting. And I thought, it's exciting, the idea that there is another life form that is more intelligent than us, and it's interacting with us, and it's on our planet. That's exciting. It's great.
I thought it was just my wife, but apparently not. It's apparently more, you know, it's more complex than that.
Yeah. But now now with the Grush thing, and because that was always one I was kind of, when I started hearing about this from people I was talking to like almost a year ago, who I haven't cleared that I can talk about what they said to me or who said it, but started hearing about the existence of whistleblowers who are going to come forward about this exact subject and being told flat out, yes, these craft exist and these programs exist. I was just sort of going, I was not ready to accept that. I was willing to accept, okay, they're flying around in the sky and they can do all these remarkable things. But that we, you know, that it really, you know, that we really are that engaged with it on a very secret level.
Yeah, and I think the evolving theories of proximity that we may or may not have with these entities is one of the more new and potentially disturbing aspects of it, that there's something about, well, you know, if something's really far away in outer space and sort of coming to visit us, that seems like a, I don't know, more conventional way to meet these new beings, and maybe we can talk and share our languages. And whereas what seems to be happening is the conversation is getting less about ET and becoming more about potentially sharing this planet with something that we are only now kind of becoming aware of, or is allowing us to become aware of, something that could occupy space or reality in a way that we simply cannot perceive, which is bothersome because it doesn't, where is it? It's the fishbowl effect. We simply cannot perceive their dimensional world. And to me, it begins to really expand the conversation, and things make a lot more sense. We have a conversation coming up with Paul Hynek, you know, on our podcast, and we talk about
Son of J. Allen Hynek.
Son of J. Allen Hynek, who coined the phrase "close encounters of the first, second, and third kind." So, made a cameo in Close Encounters, the movie. So we were talking about the possible chemical gateways to these things, and whether or not they are accessible in different ways. But it definitely makes the conversation exotic and the questions even more bothersome and confusing, and makes it all very fascinating. And I still think there's probably amazing good that can come from technologies that could help us evolve.
I think if
interesting
we're gonna,
to know their motivations.
Yeah, if we want to cling to any utopian possible outcome, then maybe this is, if we break down the secrecy and we get rid of, as they say in the legislation, the stovepiping of intelligence, and technology, the stovepiping of research, then maybe there are breakthroughs that we can make. If we can put our very best scientists all working on these problems together holistically, then maybe we can make breakthroughs. Maybe we can develop new sources of information that won't destroy our planet. You know, maybe we can develop some sort of anti-gravity drives that can give us access to the neighborhood, you know, and maybe our lives can be really enriched, you know, like, you know, I think, was it Gary Nolan who was talking about how our world was changed by, you know, a grain of silicon and being doped with a few chemicals, and how much more, I mean, the technology that we could gain, how it could change our worlds.
And he is one of the, I have to say, coolest people to talk to about this topic. We'll get him on the podcast at some point, where we keep circling. But he's also an optimist. You know, he seems really excited about all the prospects, which is good. I'm excited by his excitement and his optimism and his intense curiosity on this. And so I think there's, you know, reasons to be wary and cautious and hopeful and curious above all.
Yeah. Or as Lou Elizondo said, somber is another.
Or that. There's that.
There's another way to go.
I was going to say, there's that. He has a different take on it, which is all his military analogies are very, you know.
Yeah.
But
as I said, he was saying over a year ago that he thought humanity was reaching a pivot point. Let's hope it's a pivot towards something good. I hope it's a pivot towards something we can all live with. And also, I mean, I guess I kind of hope that whatever intelligence it is behind this, it seems to have been quite content to live parallel to us. Obviously not interacting with us, doing some things, possibly some terrible things, if you listen to the people who have been through the abductee phenomena, some horrifying things, you know. I was just listening to Whitley Strieber on Weaponized with Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp last night. That aspect of it is terrifying. But by and large, the non-human intelligences seem to be letting us go our own way for the most part. We still keep acting like we have governments and that, like, we have dominion over the planet. And so far, they let us do that. Now, once we are all talking about it in the open, does it have any impact on them?
I find that argument strange, because it seems to speak to some, definable line of knowledge, you know, where, once the UFO secret's out, there would be some response, or it would speak to something. I don't know. I find that hard to quantify. I find the theory disturbing that it's not being disclosed, because if we disclose it, then all hell breaks loose, or something happens that we can't prepare for, or there's prophecies or God knows what else. I don't know. I mean, I'm like, a lot of people do kind of know and talk about it. Like, what constitutes, who has to finally find out and say, I believe, and then all the fucking ships arrive and we're all, you know, harvested. But I'm hopeful that that's just some general, very religious general's fear or concern. I don't obviously know. And I think Lou Elizondo has publicly sort of thrown out that theory, not claimed to vouch for it, but we don't know what they know. We don't know what they've seen, and there is a very reasonable there's every reason to believe that this is probably not one entity or one species of creature. If there are if there's one or two, if there's us and there's one more, then there's probably billions, right? Mm-hmm. So there is still a big universe out there, and now potentially multidimensional things that live. So probably some are malevolent and some are not malevolent.
Yeah. And also, I think the throughout human history, anytime the authorities have said that there was information that if it became public, it would bring about the downfall of civilization. It's happened a lot, you know, Copernicus and Galileo, and the fact is that societies have never collapsed. People, for better or worse, just kind of adapt. You know, even like in the 70s, you had like Future Shock by Alvin Toffler saying technology is running too fast and human beings will not be able to cope with the pace of technology and society will collapse. It didn't. We, in fact, really like our cell phones. We really like the internet. You know, we really like all this technology that Alvin Toffler thought would drive us all insane.
And our children, generally, despite our raving and hysteria over whatever, they're like, I look at this, I look at that, I kind of know they're just going with it. And I think it's, you know, kind of the narcissism of human beings that every time their sole position in the universe is jostled, Galileo style, where, you know, we're not, you know, the center of the universe, then everybody does kind of freak out, particularly the power institution. So I agree. There's, paradigm shifts aren't always pleasant, and we haven't had many of them recently. So this would be a biggie for sure.
And one thing, it seems like one religious group, a fairly well-known religious group, has been preparing for disclosure for a very long time. And it's the Catholic Church.
Their role in all this would be fascinating, because Grush dragged them right into the middle of it. I have some questions for the Pope, Dave. So if you could arrange to have Pope Francis on the next podcast, that would be great.
Yeah. So if we had that Pope that helped the U.S. nab the UFO that landed in Italy. So maybe he started it. But there's also, I think it was Diana Pazolka who wrote the American Cosmic. I think she's gone public saying that she was given access to the Vatican's private secret storeroom of documents and artworks depicting UFOs going back to the Roman Empire.
Field trip.
Yeah. So so it seems like the Catholics have been kind of prepping for this for maybe hundreds of years. And the fact the Pope did come out last year, 2 years ago? I'm forgetting now, I'm losing track of time. And the Vatican released a statement on what it would mean to the Catholic Church if aliens arrived on Earth, and basically said all it would mean is that the size of the Catholic congregation is enlarged.
Sounds like a church-like approach, yeah. You know, just like more congregants.
Yeah.
I think we should set aside just an hour to chat, you know, Vatican alien connections,
yes.
You know, or what's been talked about or written about, because I think that's fascinating. And I find this fascinating. Listen, this was our breaking news podcast because there was so much goddamn yes. news happening that we, you know, we needed to address. I needed to find out how you were feeling about all this. And we might have to do this more often because the hits keep on coming.
Yes. Yes. And yes. And I'm not sure if it's going to allay my anxiety or amplify it, but I think we should do this anyway.
Yeah, we will. I mean, yeah. Listen, I don't, you know, I don't, we'll amplify it if we need to.
Yeah.
I'm here for you. I'm here for you.
And we should record as many as we can before we're lining up with our copies of To Serve Man and boarding the next shuttle off the planet.
Yes, before they're taken away, you know, we'll be here informing the public as best we can the bridge between these the secrets and you know and what is known. But as always, buddy, a pleasure.
Well, always good to see you and talk with you.
We're gonna we'll pick up with our regularly scheduled program. Amazing conversations that we've had with
Jeremy Corbell,
Leslie yes, Kane,
Leslie Kane, Ralph Blumenthal, T.J. Allard, who was the man who produced the pilot episode in the series Secrets of the Skinwalker Ranch.
Great chat with him.
Interesting conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and obviously did we talk about Paul Hunt? You mentioned Paul Hynek.
And Paul Hynek, and yeah. You know, many, many more to come. So it's going to be a fun ride. But mm-hmm. listen, stay away from the smoke. Stay away from the Canadian smoke, mm-hmm. which, I mean, look, is, you know, as a Canadian, you're kind of responsible for. So, yes. You know, you need to own that.
Well, you know, with Canadians, we just run out and cure bacon with it. So
there you go. So that, you know, see you at breakfast tomorrow. In the meantime, I'll see you next week, I guess.
See you next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.